out there, friends, and thanks so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives again with me, Cam Hale. And of course, as always, I actually was going to get a new co-host. I was going to get nice Kyle Filson, but now I've got scratchy coffee, like somewhat allergy affected Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here. I'm digging it. I shouldn't be stuck at the office. I shouldn't be stuck at the studio today recording because it is beautiful outside.
Yeah, we got to get out of here.
And I mean, I hear the disc golf course a-calling, but it is, you know, a holiday weekend here.
Yeah.
So my weekend's already been filled up with stuff to do. I'm going to be sitting by the pool and things like that.
You going to cook?
I'm not, but I'm going to be there lending a hand. We're going to DeLee's.
Are you
going to
sit back
house.
And point and all that stuff?
Yeah, I'll throw out grilling advice and the way I would do stuff because everybody has their own techniques, especially when you're a dad, right?
Right.
Everybody's got their own technique. And so, you know, I'll do that. I really like her husband, so we get along, and that's probably what we'll do. And we'll probably watch, you know, some sports on TV.
Heck yeah.
Hockey playoffs are going. The Battle of Alberta is over. Edmonton won. That was a good series.
It was
hoping
amazing series.
Go to seven. But I'm good. I'm glad because, well, Calgary knocked Dallas out. So if they get knocked out by Edmonton, I'm not too upset.
There
we
go, folks.
But I enjoy, no, all jokes aside, I enjoy just watching the game. When there's two young, fast-paced teams like that going back and forth, I don't even know how many darn goals were scored in that series.
172. Yeah,
it was fantastic.
I've got something else to share.
Okay.
I'm not going to give everybody the details, but we're in the works on something, right? That we've been talking about. We've actually now got two balls rolling. We've got two plates spinning right now, and Kyle and I have to have a meeting next week. And once we get it nailed down, we're going to come back with y'all for a big surprise. Something, both of these spinning plates is things that Kyle and I have never done since this podcast has started. And so, yeah, it's going to pop. And when I get the exact date, like when we know it's all done, I'll let you know on both. But next week's show, we will tell you exactly what's coming.
Yeah.
We'll know by then. So next week we'll have one of them nailed down. We'll tell you exactly what's coming. I'm just going to go ahead and give everybody a heads up. Don't book anything during October, folks. Y'all might be busy.
Around Halloween?
Yeah. Y'all might be busy.
Very, very cool. Speaking of Halloween.
Yeah.
Let's get into some stories. That's why we're here. Check this out. It says, hey, guys.
Howdy.
It's Brenda.
Hey, Brenda. What's popping?
Hope all is well. This one guy at work told me about your podcast 2 years ago, and I've been hooked ever since.
Well, thank you so much for the support.
Thanks for always having good stories and keeping me entertained while I'm at work. I just have to tell you this one story of many that happened to me in Chicago, Illinois. My parents bought their first home together, and we were all excited about it. A couple things happened in this house that, well, I can't quite explain. But years later, one of my brothers had told my mom that someone in that neighborhood told him a couple people passed away in this same house. Well, I was on my computer. I was on MySpace in the dining room with just the computer light on while my mom was in the living room with just the TV on, but had fallen asleep on the couch. I was trying to fix up my page, minding my own business, but I just felt like someone was next to me. Felt like someone was staring at me. I could feel them, or whatever. All I know is I felt a presence next to me. It was weird. Next thing you know, I look to my right, and I see a black figure of a boy, almost like a teenager. I say teenager because he looked about my brother's age, who were younger than me at the time. This shadow was just standing there next to me. But the weird thing was, there was like almost a fog around him. It didn't look like a grown man figure. He looked younger, almost like 13 years old. He was looking at the computer with me, because when I turned to the right, he had moved his head as well. Like we both turned to look at each other from looking at the computer. It was just so weird. My body couldn't move after that. I was in shock. I couldn't get up from my chair or anything. All I did was yell for my mom. Mom! There's a ghost next to me! I seen him run off. The fog around him even moved with him while he was running. Almost like a cartoon. I finally was able to get up and I turned all the lights on. My mom woke up and was kind of confused. I sat down and told her that there was a ghost or something next to me, watching me, while I was on the computer. She didn't seem surprised at all, because there was another incident when she saw something in my room and walked away to go downstairs, but she came back right away and said, "What happened?" I told her, "What do you mean?" And she said, "You tapped my shoulder when I was going down the stairs." I said, "Mom, I've been in here the whole time. I never even walked out of the door." So she just kind of knew something or someone else was in that house that we couldn't explain. I didn't feel threatened by it or scared. I was more in shock that this something was right next to me. It was so black, but you can see the figure of this boy and the fog. It was just so unreal at the same time. Watching him run off after I yelled for my mom was so fast, and after that, I didn't feel right staying home alone. At times, I would even go inside when I knew no one was home. A lot more weird things happened to me in that house, but that's for another story. But thanks for reading this email with my story. Stay safe. Have a nice day. Brenda.
Wow.
Wow. Crazy to be sitting there. I mean, I've been on my computer many a night, late at night. I've never had an experience where there's a ghost next to me helping me edit or go through emails and stuff. That is,
I could insane. Use the help,
right? That would help
if they would offer it up.
You know, I might not be so scared or disappointed if I had an sighting or an encounter like that, if I didn't feel like I was going to be harmed. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't seem scary.
Yeah.
It would just seem like cool. Like, wow, I'm actually seeing that.
Well, that's what we've always talked about. If I could see a Bigfoot, I'd like to see it through a spotting scope, right? Like a long ways off.
I like to see it through a rifle scope.
Here we go. I've got something you'd like to see through a rifle scope. Folks, you know me and headlines, right? I can't pass them up. When they jump out at me, it's just one of those things. I started getting messages about this. People started sending it, and it's true. When I read this to you, what Lon posted, it's going to blow y'all away. From Phantoms and Monsters, folks, got the master headliner here. 9 foot tall, upright Black Panther encountered in Bay County, Florida.
Upright walking cat?
Yes. Remember, now we talked about how come there's not like Panther Man. Well, you asked and you received. This is what they've been reporting here. It says this happened back in 07. The witnesses were traveling. It was with her mother on Highway 22 between Panama City and Wewahitchka, Florida, which is Bay County.
Okay.
It was around 7:15 to 7:30 in the morning on July of 2007. They had just gone to the bank and were heading back home, going eastbound at around 55 miles an hour and just talking. They had the windows down and it was a sunny day, and they were the only car on that stretch of road. There was 5 to 10 acres of farmland and a big line of pine trees on both sides behind that. The witnesses saw what she assumed was a dog in the reed grass. It was black, and she could see its hind end initially. It was walking through the grass, not running. As the driver slowed down, the creature, which was about 150 yards away, suddenly jumped into the middle of the road. It was on all fours and appeared to be a very large Black Panther. The witness stopped the car, and she and her mother just stared at this creature as it suddenly rose to its feet. Here's a quote. "It just stood up, and it was big. It was big, and it just stood there, and it's facing the truck. Now, we were in a Chevy Colorado, and this thing is facing us. I'm guessing it might be, I'm going to say, 9 to 10 feet tall. That would be the height that I could guesstimate." Now, the driver was just confused and shocked, while the mother, in the passenger seat, began screaming out in fright. Now, the witness claimed that it had a large head, though it wasn't overly proportionate to the size of its body. Cat ears, a cat nose, greenish-gray colored cat eyes, a wide chest, long hands with pads on the inside, and huge, huge razor-like claws. Now, it says this thing was muscular, but not overly hulking muscular in its arms, and that it had cat-like legs and large feet. It said it almost looked like 4 feet, not two. They were so big. A thick, shiny coat of black hair and a small tail with a curl or ball on the end. And at no point did it open its mouth, so she saw no teeth. Now, she was certain that it was male. She thought it was capable also of a great speed. Now, like this, says the creature was not aggressive at all. It merely stared at the driver and her mother as if to say, "What are you doing here?" The creature eventually turned and walked off across the field, eventually disappearing out of sight. The witness noted how odd it was seeing it walk on its hind legs and described that it just seemed to flow in its movement. Now, they recognize or estimate, really, that the entire sighting only lasted 2 to 3 minutes at most.
Man.
Now, here's the really interesting thing. It says afterwards, the mother, who's in her late 70s, told the witness that she felt great fear and that she thought the creature was going to eat her alive. That's her quote. That the witness did not feel any fear whatsoever. That she was more confused and wondering why the creature was allowing them to see it. And she's gone up and down this road multiple times over the time before she's moved away now. Multiple times and never actually saw anything like it again. But it is odd that each one had a different feeling, right?
Yeah.
So is one, I guess my question is this. It's almost like a spell. I put a spell on you.
Right.
Did the witness, the reporting, I'm assuming is the daughter was driving, the mother was riding. Was the daughter influenced by whatever this aura and the mother was not and saw its true face? Or was the mother influenced to stay away and the daughter actually saw its true face, that it wasn't really dangerous. It just exudes those feelings of doom, so you don't mess with it.
Right, right.
You don't know, but it is odd that they both felt something completely different.
That is, what a strange sighting, though.
Yeah, it's kind of odd. Yeah.
I mean, how do you
explain? Puma Man.
How do you explain a Puma Man?
And if you haven't seen Puma Man on Mystery Science Theater 3000, I urge you to do so.
Right. Very cool. Check this out. We have another one. It says, my name is Ryan. For years, I've been exploring the woods, valleys, and caves of Nova Scotia for mystery, history, and adventure. I've seen some things in my younger, less educated years that I assumed was normal because I didn't catch the nuances of mystery at only 6 years old. I would just usually roll my eyes at the tales told from what I assumed was the bottom of a whiskey bottle or a bag of skunky dank as years passed on. But it was around 2010, and I was around 30, when things started making me question what in the world. As I began going alone in the woods in search of caves and historical spots. Whether it was caves in limestone and gypsum of central Nova Scotia and east, or huge crevices in the basalt and granites of the Annapolis Valley, there has always been something to look for or to be told about by the elder generations. Treasures, Acadians, Indians, and creatures of unknown origins have all been included in things told to me. And then there are the things no one told me about. These are things that started me into research, and that's what eventually led me to expanded perspectives and other things. I had read about a find of an old Acadian vase along Bloody Creek around the 1880s, which was then shown at the World's Fair. It was said to have been found in a cave along the shallow but wide creeks in upper reaches near the mountain. Over the course of weeks, I walked to the creek, looking on both sides, up to the gravel pit that was quarrying granite gravels. And I passed it, up the mountains a fair way to an old power dam from the 1890s that provided electricity to a place called Paradise. It was September, and I decided to cross the creek and look in some suspect areas I'd passed by before. But the sun went down faster than I thought it would, so I was caught with a piece of junk keychain light to light up about an inch in front of me. My mind started playing tricks on me on the way back, and I kept hearing birds in the brook, but I couldn't see anything. The following evening, I went back with a new headlamp, and upon the return, I saw these eyes reflecting back, silvery and bobbing up and down behind a rock. I thought an animal had its family in there for a drink, so I cut away and beat through the bush to avoid disturbing things. I bought a much better flashlight, so I could look a lot more after 8:30 p.m., which was sundown. This was my fourth time I had stayed after dark, about 2 weeks after the keychain walk. Once again, I started hearing splashes in the creek, like something was following me. The splashes would stop whenever I would stop, and I turned to look. But this time there were sounds like a bird chirping, a croak or croaking, A chirp like a frog was going on. And again, these eyes bobbing up and down behind sizable boulders. It was in the final stretch from the creek to the base of the small slope that I went to the road my car was parked at, and things finally got insane. I had walked halfway to the slope and noticed that it was silent. Not a breeze. Even the creek sounded like it was under blankets in a muffled manner. I turned around to see what was behind me, and my world got crazier when I cranked my newest light up to full power. Peering from behind a tree, about 16 inches high, was a round face with a wide mouth and round, silvery, unblinking eyes that ducked behind the tree again. To the right, near a fallen tree, in plain view, stood a little humanoid, 18 inches tall. Body dark-skinned and wiry muscular with long white, brown and gray hair coming from the rounded head and down the back to its knees. And it looked like hair grew on the shoulders and back as well as it turned its torso and croaked out, where I finally came to my senses and seen that there was a half dozen of these things peeking around or walking towards me, and most had what looked like a sharpened stick. I turned around, and behind me at the slope was another one with a stick, but I ran, powered by, I think, the excrement flying down my pants to the slope top. I turned around and saw them hiding, and how it looked with the coloration they camouflaged into the natural setting very quickly. I also had been, I saw on the ground a big onion bag placed under a spruce tree, filled with vegetables and packaged candy, chocolate, and spam, and cheeses in baggies, but still mostly frozen so it would last all night. I don't know what I saw, but I knew somehow that bag of stuff would have become my garnishments had I became the main course in some cold hole in the earth. They looked like they had heads very similar to where the wild things are. Rounded silver eyes that did not blink or move. They looked like silver globes in their sockets. They had a wide mouth with thick lips, upturned noses, and a body like an African pygmy. I went home that night wondering if what I saw was from a bump on my head or something. I didn't know what it could be. I decided to go back and look in the daytime again, but I stopped and went in from another direction, beside the 101 highway where it crosses over the creek. Parting the trees as I walked towards the area of question, I instantly realized it was a bone field. I was walking through a few deer and smaller animals. Many of the bones were chewed on and smashed up. At first glance, it looked like a spot where animals got hit by cars on the provincial highway. Cars don't leave small childlike teeth marks on porcupine bones, though. Nor do they splinter bones on the spot 30 feet off the road, leaving them sucked empty. Cars don't, but carnivores do. I went back again and never alone after I realized someone was feeding those goblins, possibly to keep things safe, and left alone, as I learned may have been the case at a much later time. And I got a machete for such. Things indeed go bump at night and in the daylight, but that's for later. Thanks for what you do, Ryan Taylor. So this guy had an encounter with some crazy humanoids, 18 inches tall, holding spears, following goblins along the creek. Yeah, goblins. And he said it looked like somebody was leaving them food.
Maybe they were.
I know.
Crazy. Dude, that's cool. I love the idea of those little things out there. Right? It's the D&D mind. I can't help it.
That is creepy. Well, let's take a break, folks. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about some crazy park ranger stories. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with expanded perspectives. Hope everybody out there is doing good. Today's subject matter is, it's very interesting. If you don't know, here on the show, we have all these files. Now, these are digital files on hard drives, not physical files like in a filing cabinet, where people send us stories and accounts, and we kind of separate them into groups. And this is one particular group that we've gotten messages throughout the years on. Also, people have passed links and stuff to other stories and other places, and even a few books that are in digital format that are stashed in this file. And today's file, I'm talking about like park rangers, strange camping stories that have happened in national parks, things like that. And we got an email about 8 months ago, I think, 6 to 8 months ago, and it's a real doozy. And I was quite shaken by the story, and I put it in into that group, into the park rangers, camping, national parks kind of category, and kind of forgot about it. Then this last week, when I was trying to come up with what we were going to discuss, I saw that file folder and I was like, oh yeah, maybe we should cover that this week. So that's what we decided. This first story, it's a horrific story. Quite terrifying, because the sightings of these things has been increasing, or at least people are coming forward with the sightings of these things. Just give it a listen. It says, hello, Expanded Perspectives. I'm a big fan of your show and have been listening for years now, mostly because of my job. Podcasts and audiobooks are a perfect fit. My job is mostly a very solitary one. You see, I'm a park ranger. You can call me Jim. Of course, that's not my real name. I don't want to use my real name because I would be fired immediately if anyone found out I was spilling the beans on what I'm about to share with you. I'll be honest, I've been on the fence about sharing my experiences with you and the thousands of other listeners out there. Sometimes I'll tell myself, you need to send this in to Kyle and Cam. And then I usually will talk myself out of it. This has happened dozens of times over the years. So now, I guess I'm finally pulling the trigger. Whatever happens, happens. I no longer, in good conscience, can stay quiet about what I want to tell you. So here it is. Like I mentioned, I'm a park ranger in a popular national park, let's say in northwestern United States. The park was established in the early 20th century, and it takes up about 1,700 square miles. Now, this place is truly one of the most beautiful places in the world. It has everything. From mountains, alpine meadows, deep forests, waterfalls, glaciers, and loads of sparkling lakes. Some of the vistas seen from some of the roads here are breathtaking. A photographer's paradise. There even isn't that many roads in this park. Now, this is an effort to preserve its primitive and unspoiled beauty. My encounter took place north of the main road that bisects the park. It happened in the summer of 2009, in only my second year as a ranger. So, I was still a little green. I was the, if you want to call it, the new guy. Now, this national park, it's a busy place in the summer. There are about 2 million visitors that come to enjoy the beauty of this rustic area each and every summer. To help us protect the special place, the park has several different types of park rangers. Some rangers protect the national park by enforcing its laws and regulations that were created by the U.S. Congress and the superintendent of the park. Other rangers protect the park by educating visitors about all the wonderful things about the park. Some rangers patrol the trails to make sure that visitors are safe and that the trails are in good condition. A ranger's job is to protect all that is within the national park from harm. This can be very exciting because you never know what you might do in a particular day. A ranger might help a visitor who needs some directions to the visitor center, or help treat and load an injured patient into an air ambulance. Sometimes even put out a car fire, investigate a poaching, and this could all happen in one single day. A ranger can be called on a search and rescue day or night, 24/7. So, they must always have their rescue gear ready to go. Rescues can take a couple hours, up to a couple weeks. I am a backcountry ranger. This is my deal. As a backcountry ranger, you need to be experienced in lots of things, like horseback riding, backcountry skiing, avalanche safety. You have to be able to hike more than 20 miles at a time, and you have to be able to work long shifts completely all alone. It is a very physically demanding job, and it's definitely not for everyone. We have to be well-trained for extreme weather conditions. Backcountry rangers hike the trails every day. They check the trails to make sure that there are no hazards, such as a tree across one of the trails. If a tree is across the trail, the ranger will use a chainsaw to cut it and move it out. The rangers also talk to visitors that are in the backcountry, camping and making sure that they're safe and following all the rules. Because of the amount of territory I have to cover, it's not uncommon for me to spend 10 days camping before ever coming out of the backcountry. Before being a ranger, I was in the Marines. So, needless to say, I was and still am in fantastic shape. I know how to get around. I know how to protect myself. And I know how to live in the backcountry for extended periods of time if need be. It's for all of these reasons that I love my job. I mean, I love my job. Now that I've given you my backstory and laid the foundation, I will shift to the day of my encounter. It happened in early summer. I was out patrolling the trails, my normal duty, looking for campers and warning them about brown bears. A few had been seen by other campers in the area just a few days prior. The trail I was going down was at the base of a large mountain, an 8,500 or so foot mountain. I was hiking through a small pass near a small lake. Now remember, in this park there are lots of trails and lots of lakes. There are a few campsites in this one particular area, and I wanted to check on any campers that might be there. This place is very remote. You have to pack way in to get out here. So there are campers, but there's not like loads of people. You can go days without seeing anybody. So I was walking and I was checking to see if there was anyone around, if everyone was okay, make sure that they had plenty of rations and there were no injuries. I wanted to warn them about the bears in the area and move on. In early summer, that's when mother bears come out of their dens with one to two cubs with them. Now, I don't need to tell you, because I know you're both hunters, that you don't want to be messing around with a mother and her cubs. Anyway, as I approached one campsite, I could clearly see that it was occupied. In fact, it was occupied by three hikers. I could see a small clothesline with some clothes hanging from the line. I noticed some fishing poles propped up against a tree. I saw one tent, two hammocks, some tarps, some camping stoves, and other things. I walked up and I introduced myself And three hikers came out and they spoke with me. It was three college students. I would guess between 19 and 21 years of age. All three were males. Let's call them Josh, Tim, and Joe. They were all students from a small community college in eastern Idaho. They told me that they had been in the park for 5 days so far and were planning on staying another three or four before they had to head back home. Josh and Tim seemed to be pretty chill kids. They seemed to be used to the woods. They seemed used to camping, hiking, wildlife and such. After doing this job for even a short while, you can definitely tell people who are used to the outdoors and those that are not. Tim and Josh, you could just tell, were well-seasoned outdoorsmen. Joe, on the other hand, he didn't look like he was having any fun at all. First of all, he looked jittery. He seemed nervous. He even looked a little white in the face. I could instantly tell that this was probably his first time in the backcountry, and I deduced that his two college buddies probably talked him into coming on this trip, and well, I think he was ready to go home. He only stayed because he didn't want to face the ridicule of his other two friends. So, after talking with them for a few minutes, I wrapped up our conversation and I left them with some parting advice. I said, "Be sure to extinguish any campfires. Please, please pick up all the trash. And don't leave any food out for bears. There actually has been a few mothers and cubs seen in this area." Josh told me not to worry, that they had a bear vault with them in which they were keeping their food in, and I told them that that was a good idea. And just as I was about to leave, that's when Joe spoke up. Joe said, excuse me, Mr. Ranger? And I turned around and said, "Yes, what can I do for you?" Nervously, Joe said, just a quick question. Is it normal for bears to walk around on just their back legs? I mean, I know that they can do it, but do they do it all the time?" Now, I was confused by the question. I was like, sure. Bears can easily stand on their back legs. They often do it to get a better view of things. But they don't just walk around on them continually." Joe said, "Well, mind you, he's really nervous. Well, we've seen one walking on its back legs, never on all fours, only its back legs. This bear, well, it's very strange looking, and it smells horrible. Not only have we seen it in the brush, but it's been hanging around our campsite at night. We can hear it, and we can smell it." Now, at this point, I could tell that Joe was very serious. He seemed deeply concerned. He seemed worried. His friends, well, they acted like they didn't want their friend Joe to tell me this stuff. They were trying to puff up their chest and act like they were tough. They even yelled at him. They said, Oh, it's no big deal. We'll be fine. Joe, shut up already. Stop being such a wuss." But I was like, hold on a minute. Maybe they saw an injured bear. So I asked a few more questions. I said, "What do you mean it smells horrible? Like a wet dog, or like a mildewy towel or rag?" And Joe said, no, more like rotting trash. It smells horrible, and you can smell this thing for over 100 yards away." So I asked him back. I said, "What do you mean it doesn't look right? You mean it looks injured? Perhaps it was mauled by another bear, or perhaps it was shot by a poacher." Joe said, "No, It definitely doesn't look injured. It doesn't really look like a bear. It's different. Now, at this time, the other two men, I guess, came to their senses, and they spoke up too. Tim and Josh both said, Yeah, mister. We didn't want to say anything that might spook out Joe, but, you know, it's the strangest looking bear we've ever seen. It looks more like a large dog, like a giant Irish wolfhound or something. Its hair is all matted and covered in dirt and grime. And he's right, it smells horrible. Just like Joke said, it only walks on two legs. And it has been coming around our campsite, we think at night. Now at this point, I'm not really sure what to think. For a few seconds, I was like, come on, these damn city kids have been camping out a few times, sure, but they don't know anything about this area. They don't know about the wildlife, and they certainly don't seem to know anything about bears. I thought that maybe they were just messing around with me. But at the same time, I could tell that unless Joe and his friends were some of the best actors I'd ever seen, they weren't playing around. They, and I want to point out they, all looked concerned now. At first, Tim and Josh were pretending not to be scared, like it didn't bother them. They wanted to appear that none of this stuff had any concern of theirs. But now that their friend Joe had spoken up, they too were talking fast, moving around, acting very nervous. So I told them that I was going to keep going and I was going to try to find this strange-looking bear. I asked them, can you point me in the right direction? I said, where was the last time you saw this thing? In what direction was it headed, or where was it? Josh said that they didn't hear it or smell it last night, but that they did see the thing the previous day, and it seemed to be hanging around or even following them. They pointed me in an easterly direction. I said, okay, I tried to assure them everything was going to be fine and that I was taking off, and thank you for sharing your strange story with me. I hope that you are enjoying your time in the park. And I asked if they were going to continue to stay. They said that they were going to pack up their stuff and hike out probably in the morning. I told them to be safe, and I started heading east. I radioed into my nearest tower, and I told them about the three young men that were in this particular basin. I also told them about the strange story they told me. I indicated that I was going to head east and look for the strange-looking bear that the young men had mentioned. I wanted to make sure that this wasn't an injured bear, that some crazy poacher hadn't wounded it. I didn't want it to turn on anybody else. Lots of wild animals will become vicious if they're injured. People have a natural concern for animals and oftentimes will approach an injured animal only trying to offer help, but the animal doesn't know that, and they attack. So I continued down the trail. While heading down the trail, I was constantly checking my surroundings for any sign of bear activity or any tracks, but I couldn't find anything. No tracks, no droppings, no claw marks on the trees, nothing. So I continued the rest of the afternoon. I never saw any sign of bears or bear activity. The day was getting long, and I was starting to get tired. So I found a good spot to camp in. I set up my tarp, I pulled out my bedroll and my sleep system. I boiled some water for my mountain house meal. My favorite is chicken teriyaki, of course. After dinner, I fell asleep almost instantly. The night was uneventful. I woke up the next morning. I made myself some morning coffee, packed up my stuff for another busy day in the park. I headed out, down the trail, still looking for any sign of bears, checking on any lost campers, doing my daily job. About 2 hours into my hike, I started to catch a whiff of some god-awful smell entering my nostrils every once in a while in the wind. Not constant, mind you, just every now and again, every once in a while. Each time I was like, my God, what is that smell? Was it a decomposing body? Was it a pile of rotting fish? I don't know, but trust me, it was bad. That's when it hit me. Just out of the blue, I was like, perhaps this was what the boys were smelling. Maybe, just maybe, that strange-looking bear was nearby. So, I started to walk, much slower now. Now I was concentrating. I was trying to be as stealthy as possible, so that maybe I could sneak up on this bear. That's when I started to notice that everything had gone dead quiet. No more breeze. No more trees swaying. No more birds singing. No more insects buzzing. Nothing. Like I was in a vacuum. Completely quiet. I thought to myself, boy, that sure is strange. Then the smell. It came back. And was even stronger this time. Much, much more intense. I was almost gagging when I finally saw something large and dark moving through the brush about 80 yards in front of me. I froze. I stopped moving because my first instinct was, that's probably that bear. I just watched this thing. I could see it moving around a little, like it was rooting around in the dirt. It was digging or doing something. I couldn't tell. What I could tell is that it was large. It had brownish black hair, and it was muscular. I mean, you could see this thing was ripped through the matted hair. I've never seen a bear like that before. At this point, I wasn't 100% sure I was looking at a male brown bear, because I don't know, it just looked different. But that thought only lasted a few seconds, because this thing turned around and stood up on its back two legs. It leaned its head back and pointed its nose straight up in the air and began sampling the air. This was a thick part of the forest, so it was daylight, but it was heavily shaded. It was pretty dark and gloomy. I was laying prone in some brush so that this thing wouldn't see me. When it raised its head, I knew instantly that this was not a bear. But what was it? What the hell was I looking at? I was in complete shock at this point. I know, it sounds crazy. But this thing, it looked like a werewolf. It looked like a werewolf from the movie Dog Soldiers that came out in the early 2000s, I think. Now, I've seen a lot of horror movies, and this looked just like something out of one of those movies. I could not believe what I was looking at. I thought, I must be going crazy. I thought this to myself. I must be losing my mind. At the same time, while this thing was happening, I started to feel scared for the first time in a long time. I mean, I can't tell you the last time I truly felt scared. Maybe as a child. I mean, I was visibly shaking. I absolutely did not want to confront whatever this thing from hell was. So I just laid there, patiently, like a hunter, just observing it, watching its movements. It turned around and started rooting around in the ground again, doing God knows what. I took this as an opportunity to get out of there. So I very slowly bear crawled backwards back down the trail I just came up, never taking my eyes off this beast. Once I was far enough, I quietly stood up and ran back the other way for at least a mile. The smell was finally gone, and the normal noises of the forest had returned. I sat there trying to understand what just happened. What did I see? What do I do now? Do I call it in? If so, what do I say? They'll fire me, most likely. They'll definitely think I've lost my mind or I'm a huge liar. I don't want to lose this job. I love this job. But I feel like I need to report this. I sat there confused. I didn't know what to do. I sat there for a few more minutes, and then I started walking down the trail, not back towards the creature, but the way I came in. I was almost to the camping spot where I ran into Josh, Tim, and Joe the day before, and I just kept saying aloud to myself, "What the hell was that thing? Are werewolves freaking real?" I was confused, but I continued down the trail. Eventually, I found the boys' campsite. Sure enough, they were gone. All of their stuff was gone too. No trash, no nothing. Hopefully they made it out okay. So, I continued my walk. It was around 2 p.m. at this point, and I just wanted off this trail. I wanted out of the park. I wanted to be back home in my apartment. That's when I heard a voice. "Jim! Jim, is that you?" I looked down the path, and I could see two fellow rangers heading my way. They were raising their hands, waving and calling out to me like something was wrong. It was Ranger Ellis and Ranger Mike. I recognized them. "What the hell are they doing out here?" Ranger Ellis was about 2 years older than me, and he had been on the job a whole 8 years longer than me. Ranger Mike, he was a veteran. He'd been a park ranger for like 30 years or something. He was old school. He was basically my boss, my mentor, my leader. I liked him very much because he was straight as an arrow. He did everything by the book. He was very serious all the time. And I had just come from the Marine Corps, so I was used to this. And I knew why they did it that way. They were both jogging towards me, and I continued to walk towards them. When we finally met up, I was like, "What are you guys doing out here? Is everything okay?" And they were like, "How are you? How are you? We came all the way out here to check on you." And I was like, "What do you mean, how am I? I'm fine. Why wouldn't I be?" They said that three young boys arrived at one of the ranger stations late at night with all of their stuff. They were planning on staying, but couldn't take it anymore, and they wanted out of the park immediately. They told us that they saw and spoke with you earlier that day, and that we headed your direction immediately. "But why would you need to come get me?" That's when Mike and Ellis's demeanor totally changed. I could tell that they had something they really wanted to tell me, but acted like they shouldn't. Mike said, "Jim, I want you to listen to me. I don't want you to interrupt. Just listen until I'm finished. Do you understand?" I was like, Yeah, I guess so. What in the world is going on, Mike?" Mike said, "You trust me, don't you?" I said, "Yeah, of course I do." Mike said, "You don't realize what kind of danger you might have been in. That's why we got out here in a hurry, to come and find you before something happened. Now, what I'm about to tell you, well, I don't want you sharing with anyone else. Do you understand?" I said, "Yes, I understand." And I could tell Mike was very serious, probably more serious than I've ever seen him. Mike said, "This is something we don't ever talk about, and I mean ever. What you saw, that strange-looking bear, well, it's not a bear. We don't exactly know what it is, to be honest. It doesn't always appear. We don't exactly know what this thing is. What I mean is, this thing It just kind of shows up randomly. It will be seen in a certain part of the park for a few days, and then it might not be seen again for years. There are only a few of us park rangers that even know about these things. We never mention it until another ranger has a sighting. And then it's up to us, senior rangers, to come and talk about it with them. The reason Ellis is here is because he saw the same thing about 4 years ago. I have seen it twice. 4 years ago, when Ellis had his first encounter, and again, my first sighting back in 1990. So we understand what you're going through right now. And no, you're not crazy. Here's what we know. This thing just kind of shows up randomly. We can't quite figure out the pattern. We don't know what it is, but it's some unknown species. And yes, it does appear to be a large, upright walking wolf or canine or something. It is very dangerous as far as we know. Many visitors to the park end up missing, never to be seen or heard from again. We think that this animal might be responsible. No ranger has ever been injured or killed by this thing, but we don't want that to happen. So that's why me and Ellis came out here. When the three boys described meeting you and the strange odors and the strange-looking bear, we instantly knew what it was. We don't know how many of these things there are, but it's most likely only one or two. These things have been here a long time, long before this was ever a park, long before this land was ever tamed. Now, do you understand what I've told you? And how you could never mention this to anyone, ever? Give me your word, Jim. As long as I'm alive, you will never share what I told you. I said, I swear. And I shook Mike's hand. The three of us walked about a half mile to some horses the guys had tied up, and we rode back to the station. We said our goodbyes, and I asked if I could have a week off of work, which I was granted. I went home. I slept, ate, and just thought about what I saw, what I was told, and tried to process everything. I went on the internet and did a couple searches of various things, including real-life werewolves, missing people in national parks. I know you guys know about all this stuff, all of the missing 411 books and such, but I didn't know. I'm a ranger, and I didn't know. No one ever told us about this stuff. But now, I know why. Also, I had no idea that so many people have seen these damn things. People from all over North America and Canada. I still work for the park. I still absolutely love my job. And no, I've never seen or heard of anyone else seeing the strange bear again. I think about what it could be. Sometimes I almost wish I could see it again. Now I know what you're going to ask next. If you swore to never share this story, and you promised Mike, then why are you sharing it now? Well, because Mike died a few years ago. Not by the creature, no. So I kept my word, never to share this information, as long as he was alive. All of the names used are aliases. I just wanted to get this information out there. I don't want anyone else to be killed by whatever is roaming the woods in the national parks. If you and your family ever go camping or hiking, which I suggest you do, because the outdoors are fantastic, just be mindful of strange odors, the disappearance of all wildlife noises, and never go into the backcountry without a handgun and a satellite phone. Thanks for all you do, Jim. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives.
Whoa, 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 whoa. What's up?
Right? Crazy stories indeed. And if these are true, then, man, like, what? There's a whole world out there.
Yeah.
We've gotten a lot of these over the last couple of months. I think we're going to be compiling and doing more episodes on this because apparently a lot of people are very interested in this subject matter. It started years ago with the David Politis books and the missing people in national parks. And now it's turned into people are coming forward with things they've seen in the national parks. And perhaps this is the reason so many people are going missing.
And we've gotten a lot of stories about just other odd occurrences while camping, like just being in the woods. People,
yeah.
Do you think it's because more people have taken it up?
Probably.
You think it's because we've discussed this because of disc golf. Disc golf has gotten immensely more popular ever since, you know, COVID, post-COVID, it seems anyhow. And it seems like maybe camping and just the outdoors, more people have gotten into it again.
Not just that. I think the world has changed because of the popularity of podcasts, because of the popularity of these paranormal television shows. I think people are much more likely to come forward with their stories in today's time than 20 years ago.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that people don't feel the ridicule anymore. So they've had experiences, whether they were a park ranger, whether they were just a camper or a hiker, they feel more comfortable coming forward. Even if they don't tell their real names or describe the real place, they feel like sharing the story. So I think that the same things were happening generations ago, but just people kept their mouths shut.
Well, and there's also no way of really sharing it. What are you going to do, write a letter to somebody?
Exactly.
Right. I mean, that's writing a letter, let's be honest, it's a pretty personal thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, it used to be a thing. And now, I mean, like, I can't even tell you when the last handwritten letter that I put in the mail was.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Right. I don't even know. So I think you're right. I think it's one of those things. The ability to share something and stay anonymous is a good thing and a bad. It's a double-edged sword. But it does seem like you get more. But we've gotten a lot more of coming with all of this stuff. I don't know. Like we've said before, we're not sure if it's ramping up, people are more aware, or both.
Yeah, I agree with you. Very, very interesting. If you have stories or links to stuff you'd like to share with me and Cam, feel free to email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can call the show 888-393-2783. Cam, I know it's a holiday weekend. I kind of mentioned what I'll be doing this weekend. Yeah. What do you guys got planned?
Well, we're all going over to Grandma Cooper's house tomorrow to celebrate his daughter's graduation from high school.
Yeah, there's a lot of graduation parties happening this weekend.
That's right. I said he is from Grandma Cooper. You just have to know Grandma Cooper. He's been an old woman since we were in school. Like, am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
See, exactly. So we'll go see them tomorrow. And then I'm going to the Riv. We're going to do some kayaking going out to Sunday. Going out there, my son and daughter and our granddaughter and all of them, daughter-in-law, they're all going to be down there Sunday. So most of the family is all going to go there. We're going to hang out. I'm going to do a little bow fishing. The gar were everywhere the other day. And I might kayak. I don't know. I don't know. Just depends on the family. So I'll be
forget about
doing
that big box of fishing lures that guy sent.
Oh yeah, I've got those right over here. Also, too, I've got to go to College Station next week to bring some more stuff back home. So my daughter and I will be making a run down to CSTAT and get her moved. And that's the pain, right? First world problems. There's a window. Like, I could leave all of her stuff down there, but you have to get it out. And there's a 2-week window, right, that they do all the maintenance. They go through and paint and clean and do whatever for the people that have moved out before you move into another one. Well, she's changing areas. Mm. And so we have it where I have to go get it all. The good thing is she's brought a bunch of it back, planning on changing apartments. So it's worked out. But yeah, so I have a very busy, well, with what we're doing, we've got our meetings next week. We have videos that we're going to be filming next week. We have a bunch of stuff. So, dude, I think we're only getting busy. Your kids just got out of school, and good thing, because we got a lot of stuff to do.
Man, I'm telling you. Yeah.
So, yeah, that'll be it. And then we're doing D&D.
Yeah, well, we're always doing that.
We're always doing D&D, y'all.
Very, very cool. But before we get out of here today, let's thank our sponsors.
For sure.
Make sure you go to microdose.com and use the promo code EXPANDED to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. This is available nationwide. Go to microdose.com. Use the promo code EXPANDED.
And also, too, folks, if y'all want to feel finer than frog fur, what you need to jump on is a little Athletic Greens, folks. Go to athleticgreens.com/expanded, right? You get free 1-year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase at athleticgreens.com /expanded.
And don't forget about our friend Jim Harold and his campfire. If you want more stories of the weird, the strange, the unexplained, just search Jim Harold's Campfire on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you listen to our show. That's about all the time we have for this week. Till next time, folks, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.